We're going to get started. Welcome to the Utah Inland Port Board meeting. We do have a quorum. We're going to change the agenda just slightly because we're waiting on one new board member. So we will actually move the swearing in to a little later in the board meeting. But we thank everyone for your attendance. I think we have folks online as well. But our agenda today includes swearing in two new members to the board, and we'll play homage a little bit to our previous board members that are leaving. We'll get an executive director report, and that's what we'll move up into the agenda. We'll do a presentation of the 2023 financial audit. We'll review the updating and several existing board policies, which we do every board meeting. We will talk about the public infrastructure district in Tooele County. We will consider a proposed amendment in the VIRC industrial project area plan. That's in Spanish Fork, for those of you that remember. And we will introduce a draft plan for West Weber County. We will have public comment period. It's anticipated to begin about 4:20. We will run those for attendance, people in attendance only for our public comment period. If you would like to speak in public comment, Diana is over here raising her hand. You can fill out a card with her. She will put those in order that she receives, and then we will go through the public comment periods. Again, as board policy, we will give 2 minutes to each public commenter, and please understand that we're limited on time here. And so if you don't get to speak, you can always do that online. And we do read the comments. All the board members do read the comments that come in to inlandportauthority.utah.gov. All right. So let's skip that part about swearing in the new board members. Sorry, Jonathan, you're going to have to wait just a little bit longer. And we will go to Ben for our executive director report, if that's okay.
Yes. All right. Madam Chair, thank you to our board members and thank you to those who are with us today. Hopefully this is live.
Doesn't sound on. Mine sounds on, but yours does not sound on. But it's on.
I'm going to try Jerry. Stevenson's. Yeah, that one seems on. I'll try this. No, I don't think so. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and use Jerry's, Senator Stevenson's. To have you do that. Thank you, Senator Stevenson. I appreciate that. So thank you to those who are with us today in person and also those who are with us online. We appreciate this. Today represents a pretty significant day for the port. Not only is it our first board meeting of the new year, we've also got two new board meeting members that will be joining us today. We're going to say, my guess is we'll have some nice things to say about the former board members as well, but I do want to just say thank you to them, to Representative, now Speaker Schultz, and also to Miles Hansen with the World Trade Center. There is a lot of time and effort that goes into serving with the Inland Port Authority. This is a very complex organization. Love it or hate it, it is an extremely complex organization with a lot of moving parts and a lot of direction in terms of what we are charged with accomplishing. And so it takes a lot of time for our board members, so we appreciate their willingness to serve. I have noticed, and so I have noticed there has been just a little bit more misinformation that's been out there the last couple of months. So I'm going to take just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a couple more minutes than what we would normally. And we're going to walk through exactly what it is that the port is trying to accomplish, not just in the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City, but also around the state of Utah. Our hope, as we take people through this, as we look at what we're doing not only in terms of development, but also environmental stewardship, we hope that what we are doing across the state of Utah, and look, people, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask for respect. Laughing while someone's speaking is not polite. So, please. Thank you. So I'm going to try and correct some of the misinformation that's out there. I hope people will be willing to listen to what our port purpose actually is and understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish. I understand we have, you know, those who both in the press and social media and other places don't fully understand what it is that the port's trying to do. So we're going to try and do our best to always educate and to help the public understand exactly what our purpose is. So not only am I going to just go through kind of Port 101 and what our purpose is, but I'm also going to ask our team to come up and go through each of the project areas. Now, I'm going to start there. Our project areas are defined as a geographic area. So we start by working with local communities. The port does not just go out and arbitrarily pick sites. We wait for those communities who are interested in us. I've gotten this question a lot over the last 12 months. Do we go out and proactively market the port? No, we do not. We have been responsive to communities that are interested in having us come into the community and establish a project area. So part one of this is working to identify the geographic region that the community has designated for industrial development. That's really important. So it's not us that is designating a site or any particular area for industrial development. The port does not have the ability to do that. Our land use authority, the abilities that we did have at one point, were not full land use authority, but those land use authority abilities were actually stripped away from us a couple of years by the Utah State Legislature. We like that. We do not want land use authority. That means the local community is 100% in charge of what happens in a project area. Salt Lake City is 100% in charge of what happens in a project area. They are responsible for zoning. They're responsible for entitlement. They're responsible for permitting. If they were to rezone the area of the Utah Inland Port Authority to zones that would not allow for any type of rail infrastructure, that is perfectly within their legal rights, and the Inland Port Authority would have no say. We do not have any land use authority. So I'm going to take as an example Weber County. This is one we're going to be looking at today. In this project area, we come in, we will work with Weber County. Weber County will designate which area they would like to help us focus on for development. There's one thing that I really wish we would change, and that is there has been the title assigned to these areas called Inland Port Project Areas. That's not the right title for these project areas. The right title would be an economic project area. What we're focusing on is how do we strengthen the local economy? The misnomer that comes with the title Inland Port Project Area basically, I believe, confuses people to believe that we're out there building or intend to build inland port project areas all across the state of Utah or inland port facilities. That's not the case. What we're doing is we're identifying a specific geographic region so that we can work with the local community to attract the economic growth that they would like to see in their community. And in response, we're also going to be looking at logistics. Logistics, I understand not everyone is a fan of logistics, but I regularly hear from people we need to be more like Europe when it comes to our transportation system. Guess what? Europe is totally dependent on rail. We are totally dependent on road, and especially in Utah, 24%, we have the highest percentage of road trucks on our roads compared to any other state in the country. We are way too dependent on our roads. That's bad for our environment. That's bad for our economy. We have to spread out, and if you think about this, can you imagine if Front Runner, the only place to get on Front Runner was in the northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City? That is the reality that we currently work with our transportation system. The only place to really access cargo is in the northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City. So what's happening? Everyone's trucking their cargo to the northwest quadrant. The first facility that we've partnered on with BZI and RailSync in Cedar City, formerly, they had to put all their cargo to rail to the northwest quadrant where they would put it on a truck and then send it down to Cedar. We've now partnered with them to build a facility in Iron County, and for every train they receive, that takes four trucks off the road coming from the northwest quadrant. Yeah, every car, thank you. Every car on a train. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Senator. So when we're talking about this, what we're talking about is how do we create better access to rail infrastructure across the state of Utah? When you think again about public transit, if you could only access it in the Northwest Quadrant, no one would use it. You have to have stations and places out amongst the actual Wasatch Front communities for people to access and utilize it in an efficient manner. It's the same thing with our cargo system. Our only real access points exist right now in the Northwest Quadrant. We have to diversify where we're loading our cargo across the state of Utah. So we work with local communities. We are only in areas that are previously zoned for industrial development. I've answered this question a lot over the last month or so. People say, well, when did industrial development become authorized in this area? Thinking that when the project area was created, that's when the zoning was put in place. That is not correct. The zoning was put in place by the community well before we arrived. In the case of Weber County, it was 2003 with an update in, I believe, 2021. But that's how long that land has been set apart for the use of industrial activities. So those who say, well, this is just something that's coming online now, that's not correct. This has been zoned and part of their general plan for 20 years. So this is not anything that's new. This is something that the community has designated this area as and for a generation. So when we designate a project area, and I'm going to say an economic project area, then what we're focused on is how do we build the right time of the right type of economic focus, which is how do we recruit the right kinds of businesses, and how do we make sure that we've got good, efficient rail access in and out of the area? That's what we're trying to accomplish. We're not trying to build big, ugly, you know, messy ports. We're not going to do that anywhere across the state of Utah at all. Anybody that tells you something differently is absolutely giving you misinformation. Our intent is to build better access points for rail cargo so that we can create a better and more efficient rail system, take trucks off the road and get pollution out of the air and provide more economic opportunities to other communities across the state of Utah. Anybody who tells you something else is not telling you the truth. Now, those who want to say that we are also participating in the destructions of the wetlands or the Great Salt Lake, let me say that in November, this board adopted a wetlands policy, and I've asked Mona to speak to that as well. The wetlands policy not only helps and allows us to provide for the protection of the Great Salt Lake, but it allows us to put our money where our mouth is. The Weber County project area we're anticipating is about $3 million over the next 20 to 25 years for the wetlands and to protect the Great Salt Lake. When we look across all of the project areas around Utah and the Great Salt Lake, we're talking over the next 20 to 25 years, upwards of close to $20 to $30 million. We think the estimates are going to be that high. We feel like what we're doing as environmental stewards are absolutely critical to create balance between development and what's happening at the lake. We have no intention, and we quite frankly don't have the ability to allow for the destruction of the wetlands or the Great Salt Lake. So for those who have questions about that, we're happy to help. But what I've asked our team to do, starting with Scott, is to go through all of the project areas that we've adopted over the last 12 months and talk about what our intent and our purpose is. For those who wonder if we have a business plan or a budget or an environmental review for these project areas, I would say please take the time to go through and read these project area plan and budget. I've gotten a lot of questions from people who have not taken the time to actually go through and read those documents. Please take the time to go through and read those documents. They're very well written. They explain our purpose and what we're trying to accomplish in these areas. So with that, I'm going to turn the time over to Scott Wolford, and we will go through and give the board and the public a quick review of the project areas we've adopted and our intent in those project areas.
Scott, are you at seat two and one and two? There we go.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Gotcha.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Inland Port Board, this is a privilege to kind of chat through a year in review, I'd call it, for 2023. Yes, sir.
These mics in this room, you almost have to eat them when you're talking to them. Just pull them back very close.
I'll be very close.
That should be fair warning for everyone in here. So,
thank you, Madam Chair, Honorable Board. It's a privilege to talk about our project area. kind of a year in review of 2023. While Associate Vice President Pack pulls that up, let me just introduce her. We've added two new associate vice presidents in the last few months. You've met Denny Stewart, who we recruited from Southern Utah, and just recently added Stephanie Pack, who comes to us from academia, but also a little bit before that from EDC Utah to kind of help us have a more localized footprint in the community. She's assigned to the Northern Utah area. I'm going to talk through this a little bit while that's coming up. I know our time's short. A project area is a hub for collaboration, innovation, and growth designed to facilitate global connectivity and streamline business operations. At the beginning of last year, Director Hart, through conveying from the board, challenged us to create six project areas. And we're happy to say that with the creation of the two in Tooele County, we're up to eight project areas in the state. Go ahead, go to the third slide. We're going to go through these, just taking a couple of minutes apiece, and we've saved time for on the back end. Our staff is a little bit across the state, so we're very hopeful that the internet connection at the Springdale City Building is going to accommodate Vice President Smith, and I hope we can turn some time over to him. Stephen.
Thank you, Scott. I hope you all can hear me okay.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I hear it's a little echoey in this room. My apologies for that, but I will be brief, be bright, and then I will move it on to the next. But we wanted to start with the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City. I'm not going to go too far into history here because this is well-traveled territory about the Northwest Quadrant. The idea of this being, you know, a center of logistics and cargo movement and all of that in the state of Utah is an idea that's decades old. But we've, you know, in the last 5 years seen, you know, some considerable growth in this area, but also, are starting to see real traction on some of the initiatives that we put into place. As you can see here, this is the, outline of the, Northwest Quadrant area, the 16,000 acres, including the little area, just east of the airport. Just want to highlight a few things from 2023. What an amazing year for the Northwest Quadrant. It was really hard to kind of compress all of the, you know, accomplishments and wins onto a small slide and really get it into a brief talking point. But we want to highlight a few things. The first thing I want to talk about is just quickly the Westside Community Enrichment Initiative. Fantastic opportunity for us to partner with Salt Lake City, partner with the community in finding great organizations to be able to work with and provide funding to really help the character of that community. We awarded several funding opportunities through that enrichment initiative, and that was a collaboration between the Utah Inland Port Authority with folks working with Salt Lake City and those neighborhoods. So that included Neighborhood House, NeighborWorks, Tree Utah, the Suazo Business Center, and the Salt Lake City Police Foundation. Really incredible opportunity. One of the things that I think that really highlights too, that's an accomplishment last year, is the amount of partnership that we're really seeing between Utah Inland Port Authority, Salt Lake City, being able to really find those great opportunities to collaborate on and move forward on. And we expect to see more of that in 2024. We also accomplished a rail expansion process south of I-80. We're going to talk about a business that connected to, but that allowed us to get more rail service south of I-80 and be able to really support businesses there. There's still more work to be done, but that rail is functional. What that did is we go into the next point, the notable new businesses. One of those we wanted to highlight was Folsom. Folsom has a facility now in the Northwest Quadrant in the Copper Crossing area that is using that rail and will be going forward approximately, and this, you know, can change on their business needs, but that takes about 5 trucks off the road a day for them to be able to use that rail facility there. So really a tangible win. Also wanted to highlight a few others. Northrop Grumman, as this board may recall, we awarded an incentive. Now that is post-performance, so it's based on, you know, actual delivery of that business and meeting the requirements there within. But Northrop Grumman also moved into a warehouse in the northwest quadrant south of I-80, a facility that was originally looked to be a warehouse and distribution. Now will be a manufacturing facility with quality jobs. That should open and be operational about quarter four of 2024. But that was a really major accomplishment. Again, we look forward to seeing more of those. Additionally, Duraline north of I-80, we are working on, you know, rail opportunities for them. They are very anxious to get that going. We are anxious to help them find a solution for that. Also Walmart e-commerce came into the Northwest Quadrant. And while normally, you know, we are looking at manufacturing and, you know, life sciences and things along those lines, this does help us in terms of opportunities from an import-export perspective. So really some good movement into the Northwest Quadrant. As we go forward in 2024, we are looking to find four more incentive-qualified businesses. So that would be those that meet the qualifications laid out in our project area plan for the Northwest Quadrant. Again, we're talking advanced manufacturing, aerospace and defense, life sciences, green tech, those kind of businesses to, again, populate in the Northwest Quadrant. We're also working closely right now with Salt Lake City International Airport on an air cargo strategy. And Salt Lake City recently did a study. They found that cargo that leaves Utah by air, 90% of that does not go out of Salt Lake City International. It goes by truck to another airport, LAX, Denver, and leaves that way. We think there's a huge opportunity there for us to utilize the wonderful resource we have at the airport, make that a better situation going forward. We're also looking at, you know, other rail build out opportunities throughout the Northwest Quadrant. Looking at coordination on the North Temple landfill still. That was obviously a big topic of debate in the last year. We are continuing to move forward with trying to find opportunities to coordinate on that. And then lastly is positioning and finding the best uses for the leased properties at 5 South, and 1100 South. So those are just a few of the focuses for 2024. We're expecting to have another wonderful year and look forward to reporting out on that as we go forward. With that, I'm going to turn the time over to Danny soon. So I do want to mention one more thing. Thank you, Danny. Wasatch Front Regional Council puts out some, you know, incredible data. One of the pieces that they put out was looking at job density and kind of the growth over the next 50 years. Just looking at the next 10 years and what they've projected, there are a number of hotspots throughout Salt Lake County, as you can see here. Don't pay attention too much to the size of the blocks. These are traffic analysis zones, but look at the kind of the intensity of the color. And you can see the Northwest Quadrant, we expect to see, you know, significant job growth in that area just based on the current trajectory. As we move forward past just this year in the next 5-10 years, Inland Port's opportunity here really is to work to find opportunities for, you know, are there better solutions for things like mass transit that we can be partnered with to help reduce the passenger traffic flow there? How do we make sure that we have the right training and education in place to support the jobs that are coming in and also the quality of jobs that we're looking at? So wanted to call that out. It's just a great piece of data. Had a great conversation with them. We'll continue to partner with them going forward, but again, gives an indication of kind of what we need to look at beyond just this year. And with that, if there aren't any other questions, I will now turn it over to you.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. I'm going to be as quick and brief as possible as I update you on what's going on in the three project areas in southern Utah. First one being the Iron Springs project area. This is 899 acres located just west of Cedar City. This map shows proximity to State Road 56, Interstate 15, into the Cedar City Regional Airport. Next slide, please. This slide is it touches on a few things. I'm going to focus on the bottom two main items, what's happened in 2023 and focus for 2024. So some big things have happened since this project area was created on April 4th of this last year. Notably, back in August, we had groundbreaking of the Commerce Crossroads Logistic Park. That is a large industrial park that has been planned along this rail in the industrial area west of Cedar City. As part of that is the rail sink transload facility. As Ben mentioned, since this transload facility began operation first week of July of this last year, there have been 100 rail cars that were moved from July 5th until the end of calendar year 2023, taking at least 100 trucks off of the road for long haul. 73 of those rail cars were carrying steel specific to BZI's steel operations that run out of Cedar City. The other 27 rail cars that came through this facility were carrying products for other companies, including lumber and other building products. The BZI and the RailSync team are working with other companies now to increase that percentage of rail cars to not only serve BZI, but to serve businesses throughout southwestern Utah. At the rate we're going, it's anticipated that we will take well over 1,000 long-haul trucks off of the road annually. I think that's a very conservative number. As we look forward to 2024, there are a few things that we're really focused on right now. First off is working with Cedar City, Iron County, and with BZI and their Commerce Crossroads Park to connect into the wastewater treatment plant owned by Cedar City. That's going to help with the recruitment efforts there. The second thing that will happen this year is opening a second transload facility operated by Savage Railport. They own 74 acres in the project area. They will be working with existing customers and new regional customers to better utilize the rail. Right now, rail coming into Cedar City, we only have two trains, rail service days a week. We would like to increase the rail use so that there could be three or more days of service per week. As far as the BZI Commerce Crossroads Park, they're already starting phase one this year with the construction of their BZI headquarter office, expansion of their steel fabrication operations, and then also building two spec buildings for recruitment of new businesses. Following the project area's plan and budget, we'll have a very aggressive focus on new business recruitment, meeting the types of businesses that are sought after by the Cedar City Iron County community, namely advanced manufacturing, which is a huge part of the economy in Iron County. Next slide, please. This shows the project zones in the Mineral Mountains project area. This is 25,427 acres in three zones. The largest of those is 23,250 acres in Milford, 107 acres in Minersville, and 2,070 acres in Beaver. Next slide, please. Again, focusing on what has happened this year and looking to the coming year, want to note that there was a groundbreaking for a large geothermal energy project, Fervo Energy. This is exploration drilling at their Cape Station center there in Beaver County. This is a next generation geothermal energy project that will be producing and delivering 400 megawatts of baseload electricity 24/7 from the Milford Flat Zone. Another thing that's happened in the Milford area with the help of Max Ivory on the Inland Port team, there was a grant awarded to make a rail crossing improvements in that Milford zone. So we look forward to this next year working with Beaver County and their economic development strategy. We're focusing on zone-specific recruitment of industry for each of those three zones to help diversify the economic portfolio there. Most of you know, Beaver County had a huge blow to their economy with the second announcement of cutbacks with Smithfield pork production. So we want to help them diversify in these project areas. looking at specifically enhancing infrastructure in the Milford and Beaver City Industrial Park areas, and then also getting ahead of some of the anticipated housing needs for these energy projects, mining projects, and then the other industrial projects possible in Beaver County. Let's move to the next slide. This is a map of the Central Utah Adler Park, which was created in September. This is a large project area with 3,200 acres, most of that being located in the Adler Park itself near Levan, 34,776 acres. We also have about 400 acres near Mona by the Current Creek project zone, and then a smaller 107-acre parcel that's called the Nortonville rail site just north of Nephi. Jump ahead, please. Key accomplishments this year. This is a unique project area because it's created as a result of six counties cooperating together to best utilize transportation assets, the rail and the highways that converge in Juab County. So all of these six county areas, they're investing in this project, even though it's located in Juab County. They were granted $8 million by the state legislature to help get this going, especially some of the infrastructure improvements that will happen near these transportation zones. There was also the establishment of a board of directors through the Six County Association of Governments to oversee the development of the Adler Park that best fits the needs of all of these counties, and specifically agricultural producers in these areas to help them expand their market and have a further reach for their agriculture products. As we look to 2024, Inland Port Authority is helping closely with Six County to secure land for to establish the anchor tenants for this project area. Also working with the Adler Park to procure and secure other funding sources through state, federal, and private funding. And then also partnering with them to create marketing materials to help us begin our recruitment efforts for this project area. So that wraps up my portion of the program.
I'm excited to speak to the Golden Spike project area. I'll get this a little bit closer. So the Golden Spike project area, created in August of 2023, spans across three non-contiguous zones in Brigham City, Box Elder, and Garland and Tremonton, as seen on the map here. Our main purpose includes the optimization of logistics in the region, but also to attract and retain businesses in Box Elder County. Box Elder County has long been a manufacturing hub for the state of Utah, and so retention is a big part of what we're looking to do. One of our key accomplishments in this project area is the announcement of the 1.2 million square foot manufacturing facility of the Lakeshore Learning operation in the Garland Tremonton zone, creating 550 new jobs. An incredible win for the region and a great win from Team Utah. Our focus for 2024 for the Golden Spike project area will be a goal of four new incentive qualified businesses. These will include projects within the advanced manufacturing, aerospace, and defense, as well as distribution, including cold storage, which would fill a huge need in the region. We'll be working within the project area to create a strategy around optimizing regional logistical infrastructure, including exploring a multimodal transload operation to service the region, as well as enhancing truck parking and fueling operations that can be optimized to accommodate alternative renewable fuel sources. We're also looking to roll out a project-wide marketing strategy to help with these efforts.
The Virk Industrial Park in Spanish Fork is currently 2,200 acres adjacent to I-15 and Highway 6. Go ahead, next slide. We hope by the end of this meeting it'll be 2,600 acres with a modest project area boundary amendment. Key accomplishments of 2023, we've completed a regional infrastructure assessment and cost estimation for what regional infrastructure will be needed, and are working on finalizing the development of a public financing strategy to fund that needed, again, regional infrastructure that's not developer specific. For 2024, we'll focus on design and construction of that infrastructure, and also a targeted industry recruitment in line with what the city, what type of industries the city wants to recruit.
The 20 Wells project area makes up about 500 acres of greenfield property in Grantsville City proper, and it is one of our newest project areas created last month in December 5th. Our main purpose is to optimize the logistics infrastructure in this region as well and recruit a diversity of employers to the city, including rail users. Our focus for 2024 will be corporate recruitment, specifically with a focus on advanced manufacturing, distribution, and aerospace and defense. We'll be working closely with the city to optimize other regional infrastructure upgrades, including water infrastructure. As a water-distressed community, it'll be critical to understand what impacts growth will have on water demand, and incentives will be limited to no or low water use industrial projects. Next is the Tooele Valley project area. This area makes up about 250 acres of greenfield property in unincorporated Tooele County and is one of our newest project areas created last month. The main purpose is to optimize logistics in the region as well. Recruitment will also be a priority. We will focus on advanced manufacturing, air-cooled data centers, distribution, and aerospace and defense. We'll be working closely with the city to optimize their water infrastructure as well, creating a regional water usage plan. As a water-distressed community, incentives, again, will be limited to no or low industrial water use projects. We'll be rolling out a comprehensive corporate recruitment marketing strategy for both of these areas in Tooele County.
We've asked our environmental engineer, Mona Smith,
Give
me one more. Oh, there we go. To give a brief update on our wetlands policy and what that looks like for the past year and the upcoming.
Is this mic? Okay, we're working. Thank you. Yes, okay, there we go. Thank you, Scott, for the introduction, and thank you, board members, for the opportunity to speak to our wetlands policy. I'd like to first just state that the Utah Inland Port Authority recognizes the need for and the importance of balance between protecting our critical wetlands and wildlife habitat and responsibly developing forward-looking project areas. And this is the reason why we created and adopted a internal wetlands policy on November 6th of 2023. And we did this through a collaborative process. We recognize that Section 404 of the Clean Water Act requires compensatory mitigation for projects with unavoidable impacts to wetlands. And this requires a one-to-one ratio of offsetting those impacts to the wetlands by implementing wetland mitigation strategies, which have been prescribed by the Army Corps of Engineers. I just want to give a high-level summary of what this wetland policy does for our project areas. In the Northwest Quadrant jurisdictional area of Salt Lake City, tax differential funds outlined in the interlocal agreement for environmental mitigation efforts can be used for wetland mitigation in the Northwest Quadrant area. For project areas with Great Salt Lake and Utah Lake wetlands, at least 1% of the tax differential for that associated project area shall go towards wetland mitigation. And for all other project areas, at least 1% of the tax differential for that associated project area may go towards wetland mitigation. And again, we've done this as a collaborative process. We are currently working with landowners, local government officials, Great Salt Lake Commissioner, and the Utah Department of Natural Resources to coordinate these wetland mitigation efforts, which go above and beyond what is federally mandated in the wetland regulations. I'm happy to provide any more context or details or answer any questions that you may have at this time.
And that concludes our prepared presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Board members, do we have any questions from anyone? I guess I have a comment, if we could. How many? 8 project areas, Ben?
Yes, ma'am.
All of them in collaboration with the local community. The yes. local. We do not go out and proactively start these inland port areas. Generally, the local community will come to us, come to the port, and say, we're interested in doing some collaboration in a certain area. We then work with our expertise in our office, in our organization, to work with the local communities. And you can see through each one of these areas that have been designated, it's what focus we're interested in, what areas of industry we're interested in. How do we get trucks off the road? I mean, I'm just thinking of the air cargo situation at the airport. Think of everything you buy on Amazon that comes in that tiny little box. Right now, it's transported by truck. The intention, one of the intentions with our collaboration with the airport is to get those on airplane rather than on truck from LAX. We already have the airlines coming in, and air cargo added to those planes just puts less air emissions into the air, and it still gets your 2-day packages from Amazon. But every area that we have identified is in collaboration with the local community and is industry focused on what that local community needs and wants, all with the environment in mind and making sure that we are doing our part. If not for these areas and these jurisdictions, we don't know what would happen at those areas. It would just be local land use, and it would just be up to the developer who owns the lands. But the collaboration and the coordination that our agency actually puts into place is what we're trying to do across the state.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I hit just a couple more items?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I'll go very quickly through these. I'm going to hit the first one actually towards the end, just so there's an understanding. There's good coordination between those two topics. Excuse me. So let me first start. We had a couple of landowners from the Tooele Valley project that have opted out. We wanted to make the board aware that we had 2 smaller residential users. Typically, we don't capture those types of residential users in the project area. We are deferential to what the locals want. In this case, we had 2 smaller residential users who asked to be removed from the landowner or from the project area. They're perfectly within their rights to do that. So it is statutorily required that we notify the board. We've done that via email, but we're also doing it in public so that the public is aware. And we absolutely respect the rights of those landowners. Second, let me just say, there's been a lot of talk about the leases that the Inland Port Authority has in the Northwest Quadrant. I think a lot of people who would like to, quite frankly, attack the port because the prior administration had signed on to 2 leases, the 5th South Building and also the 1100 South Building. And quite frankly, they're very expensive. We know, for those who want to hear that was a mistake, that was a mistake. Those leases should not have been signed. If you want to hear an apology, I'm sorry. We should not have signed those leases. We're trying to make the best of a bad situation, quite frankly. But I'm just going to say that publicly because I know there's been some public comments to that regard. So we're working to try and list those properties to try and get those off of our expense book. But I would also say we're not the only government entity that has either underutilized leases or properties. This is something that happens throughout the state of Utah. We know these were 2 ill-advised leases. We're trying to make the best of a bad situation. I'm not sure that there's much else we can do at this point. We have committed that in both cases, we're going to try and do right by the scope of our organization and also the community, meaning that we're not looking to just put distribution centers on these facilities. We would actually like to put things onto them that will bring economic value to the west side of Salt Lake City. As a result, we've said no to some users, people that we felt like were not in line with what our core mission is and responsibilities. So we will keep working to get those leases leased. It's not our intention to be secretive or to do anything behind closed doors. We would like to get those properties leased as quickly as possible. Let me also say, with regards to the interlocal agreement, I know there's been some talk recently that the interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City has gone, there are some studies that have gone undone. I'm just going to say this publicly. We're meeting with Salt Lake City in the very near future to discuss how we want to handle these. From our standpoint at the port, we had gotten RFPs ready for the three studies that are required in the interlocal agreement. They are the health impact, the community impact, and the traffic impact assessments. We are supportive of doing those studies. We went as far as getting comments from Salt Lake City on those studies. In July, so 6 months ago, Salt Lake City asked us to not put out those RFPs. We've responded to their request. We understand that those studies were supposed to be done by the end of this year. We were prepared to meet that deadline, but their logic we agree with, which is let's make sure these studies are right for the west side of Salt Lake City, for our air quality, for our communities, for traffic flow, and certainly for health impact. So we are not going to pass on those studies. They're still very much in our focus. We have every intention of doing them, but we have to move forward hand in glove with Salt Lake City. So we want to make sure that we are aligned with Salt Lake City on those studies, and we will proceed to do them. We've heard some who said, look, when you're building a port, so you need to do those studies. We're not building a port yet. That's been part of the problem. When we know what it is we want to build and the impact we have, then we feel like that's probably the best time to do those studies, quite frankly. So that we understand exactly what it is we're trying to build and the impact that that's going to have. So we fully intend to still do those studies. We want to work hand in glove with Salt Lake City on this. There have been some who said, well, you're shirking the responsibility for environmental monitoring in the Northwest Quadrant. Let me just remind you that a couple of years ago, Senator Escamilla actually worked on legislation that requires stormwater and air quality monitoring in the Northwest Quadrant. I've included some of the statute language up here. So it is not the port that is doing this monitoring. It is actually a third party with the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. They now have 2 years worth of data. They did a study in 2021 for the baseline, 2022, and then also in this year in 2023. I am going to just share this quickly. I'm not going to go through this whole study. But we are going to put this up on our website, and we're happy to share this on social media as well. So those who are saying, yeah, this is on the DEQ website as well. Thank you, Madam Chair. So for those who are wondering, is there any environmental monitoring going on in the Northwest Quadrant? Because we've heard a lot of people who've said, you're not doing any monitoring. We are. DEQ is doing monitoring for air quality and stormwater in the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City. So, Madam Chair, that's my executive director's report. I know we took a few more minutes, but we just want to make sure that the public understands exactly what we're trying to do. I know there's a few hot button issues in there, but we want to be transparent.
Thanks, Ben. Victoria, you had a comment.
I do want to amplify that what Ben said is true, and I am thankful to you for working collaboratively with the city, in particular the mayor's administration and her guidance as we decide how best to use these studies to protect Salt Lakers and particularly the West Side. But returning to the report that we had, one of the things I didn't hear mentioned, and I'm going to put on the public record that I really want, I know I've said this to you in private conversations, we would be remiss if we do not use our economic incentives and our position to evaluate our ability to bolster the energy grid through clean energy usage and potentially even municipal energy district creation. And I think in the Northwest Quadrant, we have a prime opportunity to do it. We already know that there is a possibility from people who are existing out there. We absolutely, I know that those of you who are preparing for the legislative session, the word energy is going to be like the top five words used this year. We can participate in not only bolstering our energy grid, but doing so in a safe and sustainable way that doesn't contribute to the poor air quality.
Senator, you had a comment?
You know, I know many of you are here this evening, and I've met quite a few of you. We have, it's very interesting. You know, we're here, I don't know if protest is the right word, but I think there are folks here to show discontent for the inland port. But as you show that discontent, how many of you have any discontent for the other 23 land use authorities that the state of Utah has? Or how many of you can tell me even where any of those 23 land use authorities are? We seem to be focused very tightly currently, or tight on the Inland Port, but there's a lot of things going on in the state of Utah, and this is one of the ways that we are able to maintain and not let things get sprawling and totally out of control from a legislative standpoint. I have been involved in the legislation as we put together several of these land use authorities, and I can guarantee you this probably won't be the last one that we will do. But we've got to have some way of controlling some of these things and helping not have the sprawl that we end up with. And we've talked about Box Elder County, for instance. Part of what's going on up there, those buildings are already built. We're occupying buildings that were built for Lazy Boy, and they've left the state of Utah. And so we're reusing. But there's a lot of real positive things that can come out of this. And it isn't just, we shouldn't be focused on one of them. We need to learn what all 23 of them are and what they do. Because some of them, I promise you, they weren't like maybe on the front end, but they are now. They're really very positive with what they do. Maybe a couple, the Fair Park, Land Use Authority, Heber Valley Railroad. I can keep going. I can go down a list here, and there are a lot of those. But if we're gonna focus a protest, let's be careful how we focus it, and let's focus on the problem, not on one entity. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator. Of course. Yes.
I'll just be brief in my remarks. I just want to echo what's been said and just focus on the fact that Utah is no longer a small state. We're considered a medium-sized state, and I take great pride in that. It's like me being 5'8". I tell people I'm 5'8 and a half. So we're a medium-sized state, and with that, we need to be very smart about the types of industries that we attract. And for the past number of years, Utah has been open for business for any type of company that wants to come to the state. But what we're doing with the port is a proactive approach that says we're looking not just for industry, but the right industry and the right types of jobs for our next generation of kids. But the other thing is we can also say no to certain companies. And I loved hearing the presentation that one of the companies wanted to go into a project area, but that they were turned away because of the water usage. So this isn't a let's let anybody come. We're really focused on getting the right type. And I'll just put on my state economic development hat. That's exactly the strategy. It's smart growth. It's not just the Wild West anymore. So I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Ben, any more from you? Or are you good? Okay. We'll go back up to the second notice on our agenda, and that is acknowledging the two board members that have left us and then welcoming our two new board members and swearing both of you in. So recently we had two board members leave us. Miles Hansen, who was our former chair, has taken a position within the Sterling Foundation and stayed with us till the end of the year. And then we made the transition, or making the transition here today for his replacement. And the second one is Representative Mike Schultz. He became speaker in November. We want to congratulate him and all the work that he has ahead of him, but certainly the time to get someone else as a member of the House of Representatives here in his seat. And we welcome Jeff Moss for that. We can't say enough for the contributions that Miles and Representative Schultz have done. Obviously, both of them will continue to be involved on the peripheral, but they were monumental in moving us in the right direction. Let me just say that. But we're excited to welcome our two new board members who themselves have already represented and influential in the Utah business and the government sectors. Jefferson Moss is the majority leader of the Utah House of Representatives and executive director of the Innovation District at The Point. He brings a wealth of experience in business, banking, higher education, public service to the board. Jonathan Friedman is the president and CEO of the World Trade Center Utah. His experience, connections, and perspectives from an incredible entrepreneurial and international business background will be so valuable to the Inland Port. Just before we swear you in, if you two would like to take the liberty to say anything to members of the audience and members of the board, we'll turn some time over to both of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to serve on this board. The Inland Port, as has been said, offers a clean alternative to all the truck pollution, traffic. I think it's and offers economic opportunity across the state. I spent a lot of time in Beaver County in the last 5 months, talking to farmers, alfalfa, corn, hog farmers as well. And the port being in that area will absolutely change their economy, will help further diversify it. I mean, I could go on and on, but it's a privilege to be here, and I appreciate the support to Utah businesses.
Yeah, and I'll just first say thank you to the former board members, because I know they've worked on a lot of big, hard issues. And I'm grateful that we're joining after a lot of those have already been solved. So thank you for that. But no, I know there's a lot of things we still need to work on. When I first learned about the Inland Port, I didn't fully understand it. I was a legislator, and the more I heard about the potential opportunity, the more I got excited for it. And the different projects that we just heard about today and the focuses around advanced manufacturing, aerospace and defense, I think of these industries, and those are huge opportunities for the state of Utah, for our economic growth. We're doing amazing things in tech and minerals and other things, but these will help us to expand the state much further. And I look at where we're going in the next 10 and 20 years, and I think the Inland Port is going to play a very important part of the future of the state. So thank you.
Thanks to both of you.
Carol?
Oh, someone turned my mic off. Carol's going to swear both of you in if you would stand and take the oath of office for Carol. And just repeat after Carol. Oh, yes. Thanks, Carol.
No problem. Oh, we're on? We're good. Okay, we have to eat it, right? Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name. Having been elected or appointed to the office of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Utah, and that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Sorry, big long one. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Appreciate it. Welcome. Exciting. And what Jefferson said is exactly right. You're coming in at a good time. So with that, Miles has departed us. Obviously, he was our board chair, so it leaves us vacant in the board chair seat. So I'd like to open that discussion up to new board chair. Jerry, I'll turn some time to you.
Thank you. You know, I've had opportunity to be involved with at least all the former board members and the board members that are here currently, our new board members. What a pleasure to work with you. Jeff, you and I have got kind of a long history. We've worked appropriations in the legislature for quite a while together. So, and Jonathan, very pleased. If you can take Miles' slot, you got to be a really good person. Miles is a great guy, but we appreciate having you here. And, of course, we go back to the Weber State days years and years ago, and I've been very fortunate. Abby's worked in the House, and I've had opportunity to work with her. But I would like to make a motion that we appoint Abby Osborne as the chairperson of the board for the Inland Port, and that she would replace Miles Hansen.
Yep, go right ahead, Jeff.
I would like to second that motion.
Perfect. We have a nomination and a second. Larry, will you conduct the roll call vote, please?
Yes, Jerry Stevenson.
I vote aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
And Abby Osborne.
I guess I can't be the dissenting vote. So yes, it won't do me any good. That's right, Jerry. Well, thank you. Really a privilege to do this. And Miles has big shoes to fill, but committed to the actions of the Inland Port and what we have set in front of us to accomplish. Big things to fill. So with that, I was the former vice chair, and obviously that leaves a hole in the vice chair position. So I will take discussions on filling the vice chair role. Jerry, you want to make a motion?
I would. I know that there are some of us here that are legislators, and we've sort of have full plate certain times of the year. So I would move that we appoint or ask Ryan Starks to serve as vice chair of the Inland Port Board. Well, not ask. That is who we appoint.
Voluntel.
Any second to that motion?
I'll second that.
Perfect. Larry, will you conduct a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Jonathan Friedman?
Aye.
Jefferson Moss?
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson? Aye. Abby Osborne?
Yes.
And Ryan, we'll give you the final word here.
May I think about it? Yes.
That's perfect. Thank you. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it. All right, let's get to some business of the day. I know we skipped ahead a little bit, but let's go back to the approval of minutes from the December 5th meeting. Gentlemen, I need a motion and a second on those minutes.
So moved.
Thanks, Ryan. Motion and a second.
Second.
Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Next up, let's go to our financial audit. The State Auditor's Office, financial audit director, and are you both here? They will both present Bethanna and Caleb from the auditor's office. Give us the rundown. Let me turn on your mics because you're at different seats. We always appreciate the auditors coming in and giving us a look inside the oven.
All right. First of all, thank you. Congratulations, Chair Osborne and Vice Chair Stark. So I would like to, I'm Bertha Loy. I'm the financial audit director for the audit for the engagement. And I have Caleb Tindall with me, and he is the audit supervisor for this engagement. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to present our audit for the financial statement for the year 2023. And we perform our audits pretty smoothly. And I would like to thank the management, Mr. Ben Hart and Mr. Ben Bice, that they provide a lot of help for throughout the audit procedures. And so I would like to now turn the time to Caleb, and he will go through a few items that we are required to communicate to the board according to the auditing standards.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate what Bertha said about Ben and Ben. They were a vital part of our audit. Auditors love to request documentation and love to look at the records, and they were able to provide that and help the audit run smoothly, especially with coming on in the fiscal year, having to prepare the statements and do all of that. We appreciate their hard work and effort. I'm going to refer to a packet that we sent to the board. That packet is just some of the required communication. I won't go through everything on that packet. The first part is we do want to recognize that we issued a unmodified opinion for the financial statements that ended June 30th of 2023. Unmodified opinion is a clean opinion. It is the opinion that you want on a financial audit. So we are happy that we were able to get to that point. The next item is just a couple. There's an estimate within the financial statements. There's always a pension liability, pension expense estimate that management has to go in and take detail. They worked with the state comptroller on making that estimate, and we were able to make sure that that was recorded appropriately on the financial statements. The other aspects that we wanted to discuss is other audits or findings. We perform a governmental audit standards report that we also provided. That has a couple findings. One of them, one is the errors in financial reporting preparation process, and the other is a non-compliance with bond requirements. That is in the government, that is in the report, which was included in the packet. The financial reporting finding was really just to say, hey, there needs to be a couple more, there needs to be some controls in place to make sure that the review and the preparation of the financial statements is accurate. We had a couple significant adjustments that we proposed, and you will see those on the fourth page of our packet. Those adjustments were really, some of them are typical adjustments. One came from a lease modification that was made by management. And due to new standards that were implemented last year, that once that modification of the lease happened, we had to remeasure that lease, the right of use asset and the liability. And so that one of those adjustments is just to make sure that that was recorded appropriately on the financial statements. The other one had to do with pensions, making sure that the pensions was appropriately recorded on the books. And then the other two, there's some description under there kind of about the property tax differential, the revenue and expenses, as well as just some cash investments. That was a reclassification adjustment. That was due to those four and some other small minor adjustments that we had. We did do a significant deficiency finding for the preparation. Management has responded to that, and that is included in the financial in that report, as well as the bond compliance finding. That is only because as part of our audit, we have to look at bond compliance if they have a bond, and the authority has that bond. We reviewed that, and we just noticed that the financial statements are set to be reported to the board and to a trustee at a certain time frame, and that time frame was missed for the financial statements that were supposed to be reported in fiscal year 23. The finding has a little bit of what the effect could be. Really, it's just potential law and lawsuit that the bondholder could take. They haven't taken any to our knowledge. And so we just wanted, those are two things that we felt we needed management's response on, and they've given the responses. And those have been included in the statements. That's really all we have to report to the board. Does the board have any questions for us?
Go ahead, Ben.
Madam Chair, we just want to say a huge thank you to Bertha and Caleb, not only for sticking with us through the entire meeting. We should have had you earlier in the agenda. My apologies.
You're fine.
But thank you for being thorough and giving us just a good map forward so that we can make improvements. We feel like we've got a good partnership with Auditor Dougal's office to do these internal financial reviews. There was a second audit that was done regarding our procurement policy. We're adapting our procurement policy today as well to match all of those recommendations. So sometimes auditors aren't thanked. Auditors perform a significant public service, and we really appreciate Caleb and Bertha being willing to come in, give us this feedback. This will be an annual thing, and whenever we can make improvements, we absolutely will make improvements. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and appreciate the input.
Thank you.
A year from now, we will have a different story. Mr. Ben Byes, looks like it's time for you to talk to us about the proposed infrastructure district in Tooele County.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Pull up my presentation. All right. So we have our first application for a public infrastructure district, and it is in the Tooele Valley project area. It's a Zenith Bolander public infrastructure district. So just to give you a little background on PIDs. So PIDs are governed by a couple regulations. The first is Utah Code, the Public Infrastructure District Act. Typically when a public infrastructure district is created, it is a municipality that's doing that, a city or a county. The code also gives certain land use authorities, including the Inland Port, the ability to sponsor a public infrastructure district. The Inland Port actually did that for the bond a couple years ago, and they did a public infrastructure district on one parcel in northwest quadrant, is the 1100 South piece of land that Ben referenced. And a couple reasons why a district will be created. The first is to bond against. So when you have tax differential coming in the future, but you need money now, it provides a good way to monetize those future revenues of differential through the use of a bond. And the other thing that it does is it creates it's actually a taxing entity, and you can assess a tax on the property. Now, the catch here is that you have to have approval of every landowner and every voter in the tax district. So you can't just go create one for your neighbor. Everyone has to opt in to being part of a public infrastructure district. The way that code sets these up for the Inland Port is that you can do it either as a subsidiary, which is what we have in the Northwest Quadrant. That's the Crossroads Public Infrastructure District, or it can be independent of the Inland Port. In that case, we would sponsor it. We would help it get created, but we would not be involved in the governance of the district. We wouldn't be involved in the setting of board members. That would be done independent of us. We're just the sponsoring entity. So that's what we're looking to do with this one in Twilla Valley. The second way this is governed is through Board Policy 16. That calls for two meeting cycles. This is the first meeting of the two, where we have the application from the district and we have a recommendation from staff. The second meeting, if the board is okay with proceeding, would be actually having governing documents created for the district and then final approval from the board to go ahead and create that district. Here's a map of the public infrastructure district that's proposed. So when Ben talked about the two residential areas that opted out of the Twilla Valley project area, you can see that little cutout of those two lots down at the bottom. Again, they did not opt in to the public infrastructure district. And this encompasses most of the project area. There's a rectangular parcel to the west, the northwest of that that's not included, but this would give them the ability to collect differential and to bond against that. What they're proposing is a 3 mil levy. So a mil is equal to 0.1%. So a $1 tax on $1,000 of taxable property. The purpose of that is for a 3.5 million square foot rail served industrial park, which include manufacturing, cold storage, data centers. And really it's pretty sparse in terms of public infrastructure right now. I think to bring water, sewer, natural gas power to the site to get this up and going. And, there's a really nice quote that I wanted to highlight from their application. And it says, no on-site costs of buildings, parking lots, and associated costs will be borne by any bond financing. Only those streets being dedicated to Twilla County can be included as part of the public financing. This is a really important point, and Ben talked about some of the misinformation that's been going on. One of the things that we're hearing a lot lately is that the Inland Port is subsidizing developers. That's absolutely untrue. What we pay for as the Inland Port, what we pledge future differential to, is for public infrastructure. This is stuff that usually be borne by impact fees or otherwise paid for by a city or county. So in this case, we're talking about county roads. We're talking about county sewer lines and gas. And power. This is not things the developer has a responsibility to do. This is county costs. They're going to be county infrastructure. After they're put in, they're going to be turned over to the county. The county will be maintaining those and taking care of those in the future. So I love this quote. It was totally unprompted by me, but I thought it was a really good example of how this works. A developer can create a public infrastructure district and put mills on and use those mills for their own site development if they want to, and they have someone to sponsor it. In this case, these mills are going to go towards the public infrastructure. So they're actually taxing themselves to help pay for Twilla County infrastructure. So it actually is saving some differential. We would have to pledge more than the differential if they weren't providing that that mill levy rate. And so they're really helping out the district and giving us the ability to keep some of the differential free and unencumbered so we can use it for incentives for, again, this is a project area that's subject to the wetlands mitigation. So the money going to wetlands will be freed, there as well. I think it's a really good opportunity to help jumpstart development in the area, and monetize some of the future tax revenues that will be coming in. I think that covers everything. Happy to take any questions. As I mentioned, unless there's concerns from the board, we will instruct them to go ahead and proceed with governing documents, and they'll be back. We'll be back with this item in March to approve the public infrastructure district. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Appreciate it. Of course. Go ahead.
Really, really a quick question. So, what is the interest rate that you would expect to pay on a PID at the current rate?
Oh, great question. So the last I heard it, so this is a few months ago, when we were discussing it for another project area, for a bond like this, it's not secured by any sort of, sales tax or anything by the county. It's just based on future revenues. You're looking at probably 8% or so right now in the current interest rate environment. I do hear that's gone down a little bit since I heard that. We expect future decreases this year. But that's about where we're at right now.
Any other questions? Ben, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Scott, Stephanie, if you'll come back. Oh, just Stephanie. Okay. Come back up and tell us about the Weber County process. Project, excuse me. We're going to have some speakers as well, but again, we will not take action on this. This is our first time hearing about this project, and as per board policy, we have two times to hear about the project and have comments. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you so much, Chair Osborne and Vice Chair Starks. And members of the board, we are excited to present the draft project area plan and budget for our next project area in Weber County. I'm Stephanie Pack, Associate Vice President of Regional Project Area Development for Northern Utah. And you will find the project area plan and budget draft included in your board meeting materials. This document was also included in the materials sent in advance of the meeting, and everything is posted on the public meeting notice site and the UIPA website. The project area plan and budget draft includes detailed information regarding the logistical, economic, and environmental considerations for each project area. This project area will represent a region of economic significance in the West Weber area, supporting and driving advancement and efficiencies in the logistical needs of the region, as well as promoting responsible economic growth and prosperity to the benefit of all of our state. In addition to UIPA's current and planned project areas, the West Weber project area adds a critical component to meeting Utah Inland Port Authority's statutory mission to support and maximize long-term economic benefits for the state of Utah. By statute, the UIPA project areas must meet the following criteria: need to effectuate a public purpose, public benefit to the development project, economically sound, and promotes the statutory goals and objectives of UIPA. Additionally, each participating governmental body must invite Utah Inland Port Authority to create a project area. The Weber County Commission has passed a resolution supporting the creation of this port project area. I'm excited to invite speakers representing the project area to speak today. Each will provide aspects of how and why an inland port project area will benefit the region. We will begin with Weber County Economic Development Director Stephanie Russell. Following her will be Chris Roybal, Executive Director for the Northern Utah Economic Alliance. Following Chris Roybal's presentation, we're pleased to invite Joel Ferry, Executive Director of the Division of Natural Resources, to address this board. We'll turn it over to Stephanie Russell, who will be joining us virtually.
Board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at your meeting today. My name is Stephanie Russell. I'm the Economic Development Director, and I also handle all the government relations for the county, for Weber County. I approached Ben Hart back in late spring of last year to come and take a look at our project area. The West Weber Corridor has been on Weber County's vision plan for a long time. And as of July 2022, we officially adopted a general plan for that entire area. So we've worked with several different state organizations, including Northern Utah Economic Alliance, which we'll hear from Chris Weigel in just a minute, as well as EDC Utah, partnering up with our Wasatch Front Regional Council. We have a lot of stakeholders, including private developers and other public organizations that have a stakehold out in this corridor. This corridor has been examined for decades. The properties that are going to be considered for the Inland Port area, project area, the economic project area, as we shall now refer to it as, those properties have been zoned manufacturing, some of them as long as 50 years. Everything that's included in the proposed project area has been examined by our commission, as well as our development team, as well as it is in complete compliance with our general plan. Our general plan can be found at the Weber County website if you're interested in looking at it. Weber County has a vision, and that vision is smart growth. That vision is a place-based philosophy. We take a lot of time and consideration working with our local stakeholders, particularly out in that area, to put together that general plan. In regards to working with Inland Port, we spent a lot of time working with our stakeholders as well prior to even approaching the port. And then once we did have engagement with the port, we once again had several different stakeholder meetings with our property owners and developers out in that area to make sure that this was in line with the vision that everybody has for Weber County. Weber County has a vision in this area of creating not just jobs and not just pad-ready sites. That's an antiquated approach to economic development, and it's something that we do not practice here in the county. We practice smart growth principles. We practice place-based. We practice bottom-up principles. And our plan in that area is to create an area of advanced manufacturing, and we call it our West Weber Industrial District and Renewable Energy Hub. We are very, very interested in being one of the leaders in sustainability in the state as well as the region. We have been working very closely with our partners in renewable energy and our partners on the state level and on the federal level to create opportunities to bring in very unique types of businesses. And I love what was said earlier that we don't bring in businesses that aren't something that's going to be detrimental or not in line with the vision that we have. Once again, we practice a vision smart growth principle. We're not desperate, but what we are is determined. And we're determined to create an environment out there that is work friendly, that has public amenities, that has affordable housing, and that has an opportunity to make a significant impact on the carbon footprint. As we actually live exist in a non-attainment area in that area. So we have to take air and water quality very, very seriously. So with that being said, I just want to reiterate that we approach the port. The port for us, as it relates to Weber County economic development and in relationship to the vision of that whole area in the West Weber Corridor, we see the port as a resource. They are one of our tools that we will be using to create this vision, enact this vision. And this vision is not a temporary 10 to 5 year vision. This is a 50-year plus vision. We're in desperate need of putting in sustainable infrastructure, particularly as it relates to water and sewer. The port has resources, and they have funding mechanisms that will enable us to put in the right type of infrastructure in that area so that we can make sure that we have environmental friendly and sustainable growth in that industrial core, as well as the residential pieces that will be going into that area as well.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. And we'll turn the time over to Chris Roybal.
Good afternoon, Chris Roybal, Northern Utah Economic Alliance. Good to see all of the activity that the port's doing around the state. My group is a regional partnership between Davis and Weber County for outreach marketing in the area. We've been working on this West Weber, what we call mega site, for the last three plus years. So we're excited to see the opportunity to have the port join up with our team, leverage our resources. Everybody knows that economic development is a team sport, so we need all of the leverage and expertise that we can get to make this happen. As Stephanie mentioned, there's been a lot of economic activity in this area for a long time. Compass Minerals, Western Zirconium have been out there. They utilize the existing rail spur that the UP rail line sits on. I will say that the opportunity for additional rail activity in that area is highly needed. It's very underutilized, so we look forward to seeing the port help us with that. We're still entertaining a high level of advanced manufacturers and other industrial users that would come to that site. I think most of you know that our inventory rate's pretty low right now. There's about 50 million square feet in northern Utah. We have a 3% vacancy rate. That means that companies don't have a lot of places to go to either expand their business or grow in our area. And as you all know, companies need real estate. They need people. So this site is unique in northern Utah. We have basically a blank canvas to really do it the right way, as Stephanie mentioned. There is infrastructure there, but there needs to be a lot more infrastructure brought. So we've been working hard for the last 3 years. We appreciate the partnership with the state for phase one of our wastewater infrastructure. It'll be coming in 2024, but that's just really kind of phase one to what we need to do to make this area viable for a lot of different industrial users. So I'll end with that to be brief, but we're excited to see the port join our team, Weber County, and the rest of the resources in northern Utah to make this an economically viable area in the state. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Chris. We'll turn the time over to Director Ferry, and I will also be sharing a map as he presents.
Hey, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to join you here today. So there's another map that I also have I'd like to show that I emailed to Ben. But basically in a nutshell, the Weber County Inland Port here on the west side is it's a critical area. It's an area that the state of Utah has made some significant investment in. You can see the highlight of where the Inland Port sits, and then properties that are owned by the Division of Wildlife Resources, both to the north and to the south and to the west of these port areas. When we look at this development and this growth, we talk about sustainability. We talk about being forward-looking and being sustainable in our development. And those are all good buzzwords and really important. And it's important that we put those in practice as well. And so looking at I think that the Department of Natural Resources and Division of Wildlife Resources in particular, especially when we talk about areas around the Great Salt Lake, there's some very sensitive and critical areas that can't have an impact if they're not developed properly, if we're not mindful of some of those impacts that can have on migrating bird species, on water, water delivery, water availability, water quality. And so what we've done is just identified and kind of highlighted some of the areas that may be a little sensitive that fall within this port boundary. Not to say that they can't be developed, but what I would encourage as we move forward is encourage step backs, encourage areas of, say, conservation easement or other protection areas to say, yeah, these can fall within the port. We're not going to necessarily develop out some of these areas. And this is just an example of that. I think that would be very forward thinking, and it could be very important. When you overlay this port area with there's a national wetlands inventory map, there's quite a bit of this area that from the Army Corps of Engineers perspective would be considered wetlands. And so you know, we encourage, if development does occur on some of those areas, we encourage that mitigation occurs as well. A lot of these areas are critical nesting habitat areas and other thing, you know, bird use areas. And that mitigation typically is in the form of a set aside or an easement or a protection area. This is a very large, you know, I heard, you know, we're talking about something of a 50-year plan, and a port or a development of this size is that long-term trajectory. And I think done properly, we can see positive outcomes. We can see each other working hand in hand, arm in arm, to come up with a proper long-term plan that is as minimally invasive on the Great Salt Lake, which is, you know, just the blue area is the Great Salt Lake, that's sovereign lands. You know, it's minimally invasive and impactful to the Great Salt Lake, but also allowing this development to go forward. And I think there is a sweet spot. I've been very pleased with you know, Ben and, you know, Director Hart and others who have reached out saying, hey, let's work together. And I love the concept of the wetland mitigation account, setting aside some of the funds, the tax increment funds that can be used to help restore, protect, and enhance some of these wetland areas. And so ultimately we want to be good partners. We recognize, you know, rather than, I think planning is a really good thing. And rather than having just a hodgepodge of development occur in some of these areas, having it done in a master planned type environment, done in a way that is long-term, sustainable, and beneficial to the resource, but also to the, business needs that exist in our state. There is a balance that can be struck, and we look at ourselves as partners in that and helping achieve those goals. So this would just be a quick example. You can see both to the north and to the south, we have areas that are owned, managed for these wetland areas, managed for waterfowl, they're waterfowl management areas. Ogden Bay to the south, Harold Crane to the north. You know, these are areas the state of Utah has invested millions and millions of dollars acquiring, enhancing, improving. And, you know, we want to be mindful of those long term. So looking forward to have a working relationship, looking forward to, coming up with the best solutions possible. But, that's what I really wanted to talk about today was looking at some of those impacts long term, making sure that we're mindful of that and finding proper ways forward. So thank you. Thank you, Stephanie and Ben.
Thank you, Director Ferry. I would like to thank our speakers again today for bringing their perspective and insight, as well as their incredible support in putting together the project area plan and budget draft. We really could not have done it without the support of Weber County and their partners. And as you've heard from our speakers, the West Weber project area not only exceedingly satisfies the objectives of the Utah Inland Port Authority laid out in statute, but also aligns perfectly with the local and regional goals of Weber County. We have demonstrated that conditions and timing are perfect to move forward with this project area, both economically and logistically. And as you can see here, the West Weber project area promotes the following goals and objectives to be considered a UIPA project area. And those are goals and objectives laid out in our statute, sections A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, M, N, O, Q, and R. As this presentation is informational only, we anticipate no board action at this time. So we'll go ahead and open it up for any questions.
Yeah, we'll take some questions, Jerry.
Just a fast comment. I've been, before I came down to the state or came on as a senator, I spent a lot of time working with local government. The economic development efforts of Davis and Weber County have worked hand in hand for lots of years. I can think back on this probably over 30 years. And this is really something that I think we're going to find Northern Utah is much in favor of. We've been looking at this for years and years. And I think it's being done the right way. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator. I would just comment that on the wetlands policy, it's great to see those mitigation areas and those areas designated that are buffers to both the WMAs on the north and the south. That's critically important. It's why we have the wetland policy. It's why we set aside so much increment to these development areas. It will keep inside this proposed zone, but also protect those areas from future development. And that really there's no other land use entity that has this amount of scrutiny on wetlands that we do in the inland port. So critically important to our areas, especially in and around Utah Lake and Great Salt Lake. Of course. I don't know where you're at.
There we go. I'll just put this on the record too, and we'll welcome feedback in the interim between now and the next meeting. But it's a project area like this why we put the floor of 1% in the wetlands policy. Remember, that's just a floor. And we think about each percent is probably about $3 million. But this is one where perhaps there may be some requests to up that amount.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Let's move on to amendments from the VRC industrial project area. Scott, we'll turn some time over to you.
Madam Chair, Scott Wolford, Vice President, Business Development Team. This is our first project area boundary amendment request coming from Spanish Fork City in the VRC Industrial Park. As a creation of a project area, we are required to have a resolution from the city, which was passed by the City Council of Spanish Fork asking for this change. Next slide. A project area amendment is required to follow in statute the same procedure as the adoption of the project area. And so we have followed the exact same process. Go ahead to the next one. The proposed amendment is an addition of 418 acres there indicated with the dotted boundary to the north, say northwest of the project area boundary. While we adopted this before our wetland mitigation policy was in effect, the city has indicated that they plan on pledging at least 1% of differential to wetlands mitigation. They also parsed the parcels so that wetlands would not be included in this project area. The plan and budget has been updated to reflect the new boundaries pending board approval. And where this is the second presentation of this boundary amendment, we anticipate board action today. We as an administrative staff do recommend that this be adopted. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Scott. Any comments? Again, I would just say that collaboration with Spanish Fork City as things change up there and business interests change up there. Appreciate it. Let's, Amy, if you want to step, oh, you're right there. I was looking behind you where you just were sitting. Let's go through a few board policies and procurement policy, records retention, and segregation of duties. Turn the time. Which seat are you at right now? 19. All right.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be covering three policies, one of which, the procurement policy that was up for renewal, as a reminder to the board and to the public, we seek board approval on an annual basis for any of these board policies. And it was timely based upon a prior conversation around the audit that we also it converged nicely with this annual update. So we will be seeking board approval at the end of this meeting. And then we're presenting two existing board policies just because they are also coming up for their annual review. I'm going to highlight procurement because we have put in even more additions since we last presented in the board meeting. And we've really we've had prior state purchasing actually review this policy a couple years ago, but we also had them give input as well, and then certainly internally vetted it with key stakeholders. We have added and really defined things around the competitive sealed bidding process, which allows us to get quotes around that for very specific items, as well as the request for a proposal. We have added the RFSQ, also RFIs, and put in details around multi-year contracts, multiple award contracts where we're allowed to give during like an RFP or something else, we could say that we're going to do multiple awards to different vendors. Also added the ability to seek approved vendor lists, which really follows, a lot of these follow within the state statute. We've always had enhanced approval around these. So the board, with certain thresholds, we take to board approval. Just want that, those are some of the highlights around that, based upon recommendations and just things that we had internally saw that we needed enhancements for. I will pause there and see if there's any board questions around what we have. I know it is a large multi-page policy.
I don't see any, Amy.
Great. Thank you. So the other two that we have not made any large changes around them. I'll talk about segregations of duty. There's just been minor changes just based upon the organizational structure, around like operations team when a lot of these segregations of duties. And again, for the board and general public, it is just best practice to have segregation of duties. So folks specifically around money, it's not one person, handling money, writing the check for that, awarding contracts, but you have different people handling that just for, to remove conflicts of interest and really to protect, the organization for things like fraud. So the minor changes again were around just, organizationally, the operation, teams. And of course we put it in our new templates. The records retention, and again, this was one of the things that we put in based upon that legislative audit, as they had their best practices list. This is one of the things that we realized, having a board policy, it would just make sense. So no major changes on this at all. I think the only thing that we've done is just change the owner. Caitlin Felstead is our records officer for the organization, also our marketing and communications director. So if there's any questions around these two policies, the segregation of duties, as well as the records retention, will be seeking board approval in our March meeting. So I'll pause here.
Thanks, Amy. Any questions from the board? I appreciate it, as always. All right, let's move on to general public comment. Once again, we will no longer accept any of the public comment cards. We will call each of you up to the stand. We'll have 2 minutes of your public comment once your name is announced again. And then in order to have a respectful meeting, items that disrupt the meeting, intimidate other participants, or cause safety concerns will not be allowed. If you do not get to speak, we remind you that you can go to inlandportauthority.utah.gov to make your comments. I'm going to name the first two if you'll both come up and then sit at the stand. So we'll start with Jackie Larson, and then second we'll go to Daniel Stevenson. If you'll just sit at witness one and witness three, please. Either one, it doesn't matter. Whichever one you want to choose.
Hi, my name is Jackie Larson.
If you will pull that mic in and...
Okay, is that better?
That's great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jackie Larson. I am the co-owner of Seven Bar Farming and married to a sixth-generation farmer from Spanish Fork. What brought me here is the Virk area and your plans of expanding outside the port area, targeting the area of Center Street, which is not within the port plan area. So as I unpacked what's in the 77 pages, it stated that your short-term infrastructure plans within the next 3 to 5 years... of expanding to a second location that takes advantage of the planned I-15 Spanish Fork Street interchange and installing an alternative fuel station, super station, that supports alternative fuel trucking such as hydrogen, electricity, and natural gas. I'm a stakeholder in the Center Street Interchange Work Group with UDOT. I mean, first, y'all have got a lot of faith in UDOT. You think that's going to be an available option in the next 3 to 5 years, so I maybe suggest you lower your bar a little bit there. But the plan outlines this expansion by leveraging this with the rail access. So I'd like to also point out that my grandparents own and have a right to enforce access granted to the rail spur access on Center Street. And in addition to that, we own a bit of farm ground. So as I mentioned, I married a sixth generation farmer from Spanish. We're raising the seventh generation and we have been here since the 1850s, when it was actually an Indian reservation. My husband farms thousands of acres through that area that you have targeted to expand to. So agriculture is a backbone of society. It's an economic multiplier, and this ground is some of the best producing yield per acre in the state of Utah. It's also classified, much of the soil is classified as the farmland of statewide importance. So family farms passed through many generations are not land speculation. We didn't ask to be included in the board or future expansion, and you have no business making plans otherwise. So maybe your motivation probably isn't nefarious, but from how I see it, it's exciting to compel us and to completely subvert the due process. So protecting private property rights is a fundamental to individual freedom and economic prosperity. I'm asking that be respected. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jackie. Appreciate it. Went right on time. Daniel, time is yours.
Yeah, Daniel Stevens. I'm a resident of Weber County, born and raised there, currently reside there, and I've done a lot of work up there. I just wanted to say thank you to the Weber County staff and the county commissioners for their vision and foresight and what they're doing in the Western Weber area. I know a lot of time and effort has been put into that area. And like has been mentioned, it's been contemplated as industrial type uses for many, many years. And we appreciate the port having interest in that area, as the need out there has been infrastructure for many years, which has caused that area to lose some very large manufacturing type tenants, which would have brought a lot of jobs and a lot of wages and into that area. And so we appreciate the port considering it, and we hope that you guys will move that forward so that we can get the much needed infrastructure to spur growth in the area. So thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate it. Next up, we'll have Andre and then followed by Dallin. Andre.
Hello. Well, thank you for accepting public comment. I want to preface this with, I get that it's your guys' jobs to not really, you know, to vehemently be for the inland port. So, you know, I'm more addressing this to the legislatures rather than to you all personally. That being said, I noticed that you slated the impact of these public infrastructure districts to be limited to the bounds in which they reside in. And for this, I'm mostly going to be talking about the Northwest quadrant, because that's the one I'm most familiar with. But with this big industrial district, it's going to create a lot of noise pollution, a lot of light pollution, and the effects of those are not going to be localized to just within the area. It's going to spread out along the Great Salt Lake and, you know, have an even greater impact than just that already absolutely massive area that it's set to occupy. You know, you already heard Joel Ferry, the director of wildlife, acknowledge that this, like a lot of these areas, are either on or right next to critical nesting grounds for these lake birds. And I just think that it is, it's really showing of an inadequate environmental, how should I say this, environmental survey of its impacts. It's going to be really far reaching. Also, building right next to a deteriorating lake bed is going to likely hugely increase erosion. And we know that it's full of toxic sediments, arsenic, you know, not good stuff to be breathing. So, you know, I urge you and all of the other legislators to consider not putting the public at risk in such a way. Thank you.
Dallin.
Hi, yes. My name is Dallin Curridan, and I also wanted to take some time to voice my support for the Weber County Economic Project Area. I'm intimately familiar with the Western Weber area up there and have sat in many hours of meetings with Stephanie and Chris and the Weber County staff and commission as they have very thoughtfully and carefully crafted their vision for that area. And I think that it aligns very well, that the Inland Port's objectives and initiatives align very well with Weber County's goals for that area. I think that some of the amenities that area provides are catalytic and synergistic to the growth of that area and the Inland Port's goals, with the rail line being one of the few shared Union Pacific and BNSF rail lines in the state of Utah. I think that allows for a lot of great utilization of the rail infrastructure. And with Ogden being a converging point for many of the rail lines within Utah, I think that aligns well with both the county's vision for economic growth, renewable energy hubs, and the Inland Port's goals of reducing truck traffic on the roads. So I want to thank the Weber County staff, as well as the Inland Port staff, for your thoughtful analysis and study of this area and voice my support for the moving forward of the Western Weber project area.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate it. Joan and then Alan. Joan Gregory, followed by Alan Burviston. Yeah. If Alan is not here, Dee Dee, you can come up and get prepared for the final statement.
Can you hear me? Okay. Thanks, Victoria.
Still here.
So it just seems each time that I come, that we're talking different languages. We're living in two totally different worlds, you and me. I think Joni Mitchell has the words, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? Take paradise, put up a parking lot.
Thanks, Joan. Dita.
Hello, I'm Dita Seed with the Center for Biological Diversity. So I just want to point out that in your draft Weber Port Project Area Plan, someone failed to take out Box Elder County on page 4. That's not a thorough job. Your cut and paste is pretty confusing. And then to clarify a few things, so Salt Lake, not every community wanted a port. Remember, this all started out with Salt Lake City not wanting one. So be careful with your language there. And some of the communities that have ports now have big questions. At the Grantsville City Council meeting, two Grantsville City Council members asked a lot of questions that were very poorly answered. And they were also told if they wanted to rescind their support, they could at any time. Let's see, Ben said Salt Lake City has no control over zoning, or the port has no control over zoning. Actually, Salt Lake City has no control over zoning because the zoning was frozen by the legislature at 2018. Whatever was written in 2018, that is for all time and eternity what the zoning is. And so what's happening is that we're getting warehouse distribution centers everywhere. Also, Chair Osborne, airplanes are more polluting than trucks. And also the whole purpose of the Utah Inland Port Authority is to fast track growth. Your staff have said that in meetings frequently. And you're using our public resources to fast track growth. So while the developers may be paying for the actual buildings, they are very clear, and they are clear in their grammar and communication that we've seen, that they need these subsidies from the Port Authority, this big credit card that comes with a public infrastructure district, and by the way, 8% is a terrible interest rate, to be able to have the roads and sewer and so forth, fill in the wetlands, the things that they need to be able to profitably build. So this is subsidized by the public. The other thing you should know is that June Sucker, critical habitat, is within the newly expanded Spanish Fork area.
Thanks. Thanks for everyone who came up and did public comment. That will end those that we have on the sheets, and it will end public comment. Board members, we have a couple of procurement policies in front, or excuse me, board policies in front of us. The first one is BP-07, the procurement policy that Amy went through. I'll look for comment on that and then a motion to accept that and move forward. I'm going to turn all your mics on. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, first of all, I think Amy explained that very well to us. We've had this information in front of us for quite a while, so I would move approval on board policy 07, procurement policy. Great job, Amy. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Any second on the motion?
Yeah, I'll second the motion.
Perfect. Jefferson Moss seconds. Larry, will you conduct a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Sorry. Turn you on, too.
There we go. Jerry Stevenson.
I vote aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Ryan's gone.
Oh, I should look. And Abby Osborne.
Yes. Thanks, Larry. So next is the resolution 2024. It's weird to say, -01. It's our first resolution of the year. Larry, can you read that resolution into the record, please?
Yes, resolution 2024-01, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority adopting amendments to the Virk Industrial Park Project Area Plan.
Perfect. Do I have a motion to adopt that?
So moved.
Jonathan, thank you. Second?
A second.
We have a second. 2 seconds. How about from Jefferson Moss? Larry, will you roll call vote, please?
Yes, Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for being here today. We will not meet again until March. We are going to take the rest of January, February, and the first little bit of March off, and we'll come back and we'll have further discussion on the West Weber project and then anything else that is going on here in the late winter. So with that, do I have a motion to adjourn? So moved, non-negotiable. We are adjourned. Thank you.